Have you ever wondered what it would be like to have complete control over your mind? Imagine a future where you could simply open a neural app to transform your emotional responses, replacing suffering with joy or anger with witty comebacks. While we don't yet have the technology to directly manipulate our neural pathways, Ryan Bush's Designing the Mind argues that we already possess powerful tools to reprogram our psychological software. This revolutionary book has become a sleeper hit among Silicon Valley executives and mindfulness practitioners alike. Tim Ferriss has praised it as a user manual for your psychological operating system, while meditation teacher Sam Harris called it an essential bridge between ancient wisdom and modern cognitive science. The book's central premise, that we can systematically debug and optimize our mental algorithms, resonates deeply in our age of technological self-improvement, offering a refreshing alternative to both traditional self-help platitudes and clinical psychology approaches. Throughout history, humans have explained the mind using their era's dominant technologies, from Plato's chariot metaphor to hydraulic models during the Industrial Revolution to today's computational models. The computer analogy proves particularly apt. Our hardware, brain, runs software, mind, with various algorithms, thought patterns, that determine our experiences, sensations, emotions, and behaviors. Just as computers process information through defined pathways, our minds filter and respond to reality through established neural networks. Our minds operate on patterns coded by evolution, not generating thoughts or emotions arbitrarily. Every mental response flows from deterministic systems, like computer outputs spring from algorithms. When we feel fear, it's because threat detection systems activate. When we feel love, attachment circuits engage. These aren't random occurrences, but predictable responses to environmental triggers. This machine-like nature doesn't diminish the richness of human experience. Rather, it reveals that our consciousness operates on understandable principles we can modify, just as we can debug and optimize computer code. The default human mind is inherently disorderly, prone to cognitive biases, emotional reactivity, and scattered attention. While society might pressure us towards psychological adequacy, basic emotional regulation, and social functioning, Bush aims for psychological greatness, structuring our minds for deep fulfillment beyond conventional norms. He introduces psychecture, the practice of deliberately designing and optimizing our mental software, as a framework connecting ancient wisdom from Buddha and the Stoics with modern cognitive science. This synthesis shows how ancient practices like meditation align with current understanding of neuroplasticity and attention regulation. Unlike other animals, humans uniquely attempt to modify our minds when they lack desired functions or have undesirable ones. A person with anxiety doesn't just accept their fearful programming, but seeks to change it. Neuroplasticity, our brain's ability to form new neural pathways through learning and practice, makes this possible. While transhumanists explore technological enhancement through brain implants or genetic engineering, psychotechnologies, tools for modifying mental software through thoughts and actions, are available right now. These include meditation, cognitive restructuring, visualization, and habit formation techniques. The key insight is that enlightenment isn't some mystical state, but a gradual, systematic process similar to mastering a musical instrument. Just as a musician develops muscle memory through practice, we can cultivate new mental habits through repetition and focused effort. Through deliberate reprogramming of our mental functions, we can achieve what Bush calls algorithmic enlightenment, optimizing the psychological patterns that determine our experience of life. This involves identifying problematic mental algorithms, designing better ones, and systematically installing them through practice and reinforcement. The foundation of psychotecture is metacognition, thinking about your thinking. This uniquely human capacity allows us to step outside our mental software to analyze and reprogram it. Without this perspective, we cannot redesign our minds, just as we cannot repair glasses without taking them off. This ability distinguishes us from other species and enables profound self-transformation through conscious awareness and intentional modification of our thought patterns. Mindfulness, non-judgmental awareness of present experience, serves as a crucial psychotextural intervention by allowing us to press pause on automatic programming. Whether through deliberate introspection or formal practices like Vipassana meditation, developing mindfulness helps us see thoughts, emotions, and sensations as objects of consciousness rather than incontestable facts. Regular mindfulness practice strengthens our ability to observe mental processes without becoming entangled in them, much like watching clouds pass across the sky without trying to grasp them. This perspective shift enables us to stop identifying with our thoughts and recognize them as reflexive algorithms generated without our consent. By choosing to identify as the designer of your mind rather than the mind itself, you gain the distance needed to observe and reshape your psychological patterns. This detachment allows us to examine recurring thought patterns, emotional triggers, and behavioral responses with scientific curiosity rather than reactive judgment. The psychotect divides mental interventions into three realms: cognitive, beliefs, biases, wisdom; emotional, coping mechanisms, feelings, desires; and behavioral, actions, temptations, habits. Each realm requires different tools and approaches for effective intervention. In the cognitive realm, we might challenge limiting beliefs through evidence gathering and rational analysis. For emotional work, we might employ techniques like emotional labeling and acceptance. Behavioral change often involves environmental design and habit stacking. By viewing yourself as the architect of your own character, you can embrace Kaizen, continuous incremental optimization, focusing not on individual thoughts or actions, but on the underlying structural patterns. This approach recognizes that lasting change comes from small, consistent adjustments rather than dramatic overhauls. Like an architect planning a building's renovation, we must understand both the current structure and the desired outcome, making careful modifications that preserve stability while enabling growth. The practice of metacognition requires regular maintenance and refinement. Daily reflection periods, journaling practices, and meditation sessions serve as valuable tools for strengthening this mental muscle. Through consistent practice, we develop greater awareness of our mental processes and more skillful means of directing them toward desired outcomes. Our cognition serves as the gatekeeper for virtually all mental functions. Decisions, emotions, and actions all stem from our beliefs. Without clear thinking, distorted thoughts will sabotage efforts to design our minds. The human mind, despite its brilliance, contains numerous false assumptions and beliefs. We easily spot irrationality in others while believing ourselves mostly correct. Bush introduces the map-territory distinction. Reality, territory, is infinitely complex, while our beliefs, maps, are simplified representations that become less pixelated as we develop cognitively, yet never achieve perfect accuracy. Cognitive algorithms, or inferences, follow the pattern if X, then Y, automatically producing thoughts or beliefs. When flawed, these algorithms become biases, systematic thinking errors creating mistaken beliefs without our awareness. These include logical fallacies, undistributed middle, ad hominem, memory distortions, and pattern recognition errors like stereotyping and pareidolia. Awareness of biases isn't enough. We must actively work to counter them. This requires metacognitive awareness to notice bias-triggering situations. Once identified, we must design better alternative algorithms. For example, to counter the planning fallacy, chronically underestimating task completion times, Daniel Kahneman suggests using the outside view, looking at how long similar projects typically take rather than relying on intuition. Even more insidious are motivated biases, where our desires distort perception. We simplify complex realities, attribute substitution, assume victims deserve their fate, just world hypothesis, engage in wishful thinking, optimism bias, and ignore negative information, ostrich effect. Social desires further color our perceptions. We're built to seek community over truth, leading to the bandwagon effect, where decisions are based on popularity rather than facts. The path to cognitive mastery means rebuilding foundational beliefs on reality rather than comfort. Your mind isn't a delicate garden, but an anti-fragile immune system that grows stronger through challenge. When self-mastery becomes more important than being right, you'll pride yourself not on current beliefs, but on your willingness to abandon them for better ones. We take for granted that we know what's best for ourselves, but this assumption is deeply flawed. Abraham Maslow noted that knowing what we want is a rare and difficult psychological achievement. Our introspective abilities suffer from distortions similar to those affecting external perceptions. Daniel Gilbert's research on affective forecasting reveals our impact bias, our poor ability to predict emotional reactions to events. Our mental simulations suffer from realism, believing things are as they appear in our mind, presentism, current experiences coloring our view of past and future, and rationalization, psychological defenses that help us adapt to circumstances. Studies show lottery winners and paraplegics report similar life satisfaction after 1 year, contrary to our intuitions. Introspection has developed a negative reputation, with research showing it often correlates with lower well-being and self-awareness. The problem isn't introspection itself, but how we do it. We tend to pounce on initial insights without questioning their validity, forming oversimplified narratives about ourselves. Effective introspection requires objectivity. Meditation experience increases introspective accuracy by creating mental distance. Walking provides the ideal balance of stimulation and reflection time without digital distractions. Eugene Gendlin's focusing technique offers a structured approach. During walks, listen to your mind without imposing topics, then allow attention to settle on particular issues while noticing bodily sensations. Our value intuitions are evaluative impulses that attribute goodness or badness to actions and outcomes. When we identify patterns in these intuitions and label them as concepts like honesty or compassion, they become values or ideals. The sum of these values form our value system, a conceptual map of what matters to us. Creating a value system requires methodical introspection. List people you admire, document specific qualities you value in them, organize these observations into clusters, and develop precise labels or mission statements rather than vague virtues. This map becomes your ideal self, the North Star guiding your psychotectural journey. Wisdom, the pinnacle of cognitive self-mastery, isn't some consolation prize for aging, but a practical capacity for sound judgment in life choices. While our culture emphasizes effective goal pursuit, it neglects ensuring we set the right goals in the first place. Our economic system builds upon cultural narratives, with businesses capitalizing on tourist traps of life, things presented as highly desirable but not necessarily worthwhile. Yet blind nonconformity isn't the answer either. What matters is the foundation underlying our aspirations, not whether they align with or reject cultural norms. Our goals form hierarchies, from abstract end goals at the top, like raise financially responsible children, to strategies in the middle, to specific actions at the bottom. Unlike animals whose actions stem directly from immediate drives, humans construct complex goal hierarchies. Yet our default hierarchy is often incoherent, a patchwork of desires modulated by biology and social influence. Our biochemical system evolved to enhance survival and reproduction, not happiness. We're programmed to believe that following our desires leads to fulfillment, yet this connection is largely illusory. Dopamine isn't the pleasure chemical as commonly believed, but rather the promise chemical, creating anticipation and craving without guaranteeing satisfaction. Buddha identified this as dukkha, the inherent unsatisfactoriness of life. This includes obvious suffering, but also the impermanence of pleasures and hedonic adaptation, quickly becoming dissatisfied with achievements. To find genuine fulfillment, we must stop trusting our wants as reliable indicators of what will satisfy us. Values and desires are distinct. Values are quiet, intuitive ideals that guide us but don't compel action, while desires are screams you can't ignore. In the ideal mind, desires serve our values. Our values should be at the top, with reason in the middle determining effective strategies and drives at the bottom providing fuel. Desires are like gas in a car, reason is the steering wheel, and values are the GPS coordinates. The chapter opens with Epictetus's insight that men are disturbed not by things, but by the views which they take of things, establishing the cognitive foundation of emotional experience. Popular culture often promotes the idea that emotions can't be controlled, that we can only react to them. However, emotional control is not only possible, but a well-established psychological fact. Our emotions evolved to benefit our genes in ancestral environments, not us in the modern world. They often lead us away from our highest goals, causing regrettable actions and needless suffering. As Steven Pinker notes, emotions were designed to propagate copies of the genes that built them rather than to promote happiness, wisdom, or moral values. Attention plays a crucial role in emotional responses. Sometimes, simply diverting attention through hobbies or conversation can short-circuit negative rumination. Most harmful emotions today pass through our rational prefrontal cortex before reaching the emotional limbic system. The cognitive interpretation, appraisal, we form determines our emotional response. Emotional alchemy transforms unwanted emotions through reappraisal, the act of reinterpreting emotional stimuli to alter their trajectory. Unlike positive thinking or suppression, reappraisal actively replaces old reasoning pathways with more accurate ones. Research confirms it increases positive emotions while decreasing negative ones, improving memory, relationships, and mental health. Cognitive restructuring is the fundamental tool of emotional psychoarchitecture, a method to systematically eliminate negative emotional responses by examining and correcting the distorted beliefs at their root. The process begins by logging unwanted emotions, their triggers, and preceding thoughts to identify patterns. The 10 most common distortions include all-or-nothing thinking, overgeneralization, mental filtering, disqualifying positives, jumping to conclusions, catastrophizing, emotional reasoning, should statements, labeling, and personalization. With consistent practice, you'll train your brain to automatically reject these irrational thoughts before they trigger negative emotions. Eventually, you can become so adept at reframing that you bypass negative emotions entirely, even eliminating whole emotional categories like jealousy or self-blame. Desires are potential threats to our contentment and stability, causing pain when unsatisfied. While some desires beneficially propel us toward goals, they become problematic when goals remain unachieved and desires for non-existent realities continue causing suffering. Rather than just trying not to fail, we can control desires directly. The fundamental skill in desire management is learning to upregulate and downregulate desires at will. Gratitude serves as a powerful bulk desire regulator, countering our mind's tendency to acclimate to circumstances and magnify negatives. It upregulates appreciation for what we already have while downregulating desires for what we lack. Negative visualization, premortem, involves reflecting on potentially losing what you have, possessions, relationships, and plans. Though seemingly depressing, this practice complements gratitude by helping us appreciate the present moment and inoculating us against loss. Counteraction involves balancing out a desire by up or down regulating an equal opposing desire to neutralize emotional turbulence. For example, when impatient at a red light, try cultivating the desire for the light to stay red longer. By generating conflicting desires, you hedge against unwanted outcomes and turn every outcome into a wanted one. Our desires operate algorithmically, based on habits that can be programmed or deprogrammed. Regular behaviors create dependencies and cravings, whether for ice cream after meals or television after work. Asceticism, voluntary discomfort or self-denial, serves not as punishment, but as a method to down-regulate dependencies on external comforts. To effectively modulate desires, we must detect when we want something too strongly with few alternatives. The key is building a robust goal structure, not a fragile linear chain where one failure causes emotional collapse, but a network of alternatives providing multiple paths to higher goals. The ultimate skill is simultaneously desiring the present exactly as it is while desiring a different future, combining acceptance with motivation for change. This emotional stability isn't life's highest goal, but an essential instrument for living aligned with our values. Aristotle observed that true emotional mastery isn't simply suppressing anger, but experiencing it with the right person and to the right degree and at the right time and for the right purpose. This represents the culmination of emotional regulation skills, combining perception restructuring and desire modulation to achieve profound tranquility. While many philosophical traditions have praised such emotional self-mastery as life's highest good, not all thinkers agree. Nietzsche sometimes idealized suffering, suggesting a false dichotomy. If you wish to strive for peace of soul and happiness, then believe. If you wish to be a disciple of truth, then inquire. This perspective mistakenly conflates psychological well-being with dogmatism, implying truth must be painful. But as Bush argues, we can have our cake and understand it too. Well-rounded self-mastery means accepting harsh truths while remaining emotionally balanced. The goal is to be cognitive realists and emotional optimists simultaneously. For every negative emotional algorithm, counter-algorithms can be developed. When these therapeutic precepts become embedded in our mental software, they automatically neutralize painful reactions. For anger, delay responses, maintain controlled expressions, and train inner feelings to mirror outer calmness. For shame, view others' judgments as reflections of their issues, not yours. For grief, understand impermanence and appreciate finite time. For guilt, make decisions based on reasons and consequences, not shoulds. For jealousy, appreciate others without possessiveness. Resilience, bouncing back from setbacks, has become a psychological buzzword for good reason. But emotional robustness, not getting knocked down in the first place, represents an even higher aim. We fortify our minds not by avoiding difficulties, but by preparing for them, identifying and reprogramming the emotional algorithms likely to be triggered. Emotions are precision instruments that can achieve great things, but only when controlled. If you can't control an emotion, you're not using it, it's using you. The goal is equanimity, a state of undisturbed tranquility and psychological stability recognized across philosophical traditions. Self-control represents the peak of behavioral mastery and determines who we become. It deserves to be regarded among the highest human strengths as it predicts success in nearly every domain of life. People with high self-control are healthier physically and mentally, perform better academically, outperforming even IQ measures, have better relationships, achieve greater financial security, and experience more life satisfaction. The modern world presents unprecedented challenges to self-control. Corporate entities craft environments that exploit our ancestral reward systems, creating addictions, maladaptive behaviors, that control us rather than being controlled by us. The fundamental problem is that the modern world optimizes for our drives, not our values. Social influence represents another major threat to self-direction. Without behavioral self-mastery, we're vulnerable to conforming to others' expectations even when we know better. Psychological experiments like Darren Brown's The Push demonstrate our profound susceptibility to social pressure. Subjects can be gradually led to commit increasingly questionable acts when subjected to social influence. Comfort, while not inherently problematic, can become a powerful sedative that breeds complacency and prevents us from pursuing growth. A life limited to your comfort zone will hold you back from your potential. You cannot build a robust mind by sheltering yourself from reality, uncomfortable feedback, or challenging beliefs. People who demonstrate remarkable self-control aren't simply endowed with superhuman willpower. They employ learnable strategies. The most striking revelation is that individuals with the highest self-control rarely rely on willpower at all. We don't actually overcome desires, we always succumb to our strongest ones. Self-mastery comes not from conquering drives, but coordinating them toward organizing ideals. Environmental design offers our first opportunity to shape behavioral algorithms. Rather than relying on willpower, we can structure our surroundings to avoid triggering unwanted behaviors or ensure we encounter positive cues. This includes physical spaces, creating distraction-free workspaces, digital environments, curating apps and notifications, and social circles, surrounding yourself with people who embody traits you wish to cultivate. Behavior can also be shaped by altering the consequences of our actions through pre-commitment strategies, social accountability, temptation bundling, and intrinsic motivation. The most powerful motivation comes from pursuing goals we find intrinsically rewarding, with three key properties: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Self-mastery means optimizing your psychological software rather than your external circumstances. While the world measures success through achievements and possessions, true masters focus on fortifying the mind through which they traverse life. This internal focus provides stability when everything external is in flux. Without self-mastery, we become slaves to our default programming. The opposite of self-mastery isn't merely incompetence, it's self-slavery. What we often label as evil is frequently a profound lack of self-mastery. Those lacking behavioral self-control explosive anger and commit violent crimes. Those without emotional self-mastery may plot murderous revenge against a world where they couldn't find peace. Cognitive failures lead to some of history's greatest catastrophes. Many atrocities are committed by people convinced they're doing supreme good but lacking critical thinking and wisdom. Their unfounded ideologies, distorted values, and overconfidence led to myopia and corruption. A true psychotect lives in perpetual becoming, constantly experimenting with and reinventing their mind. They develop a meta-existence, identifying as the designer of their software rather than being synonymous with it. They see through the illusions of default dispositions and social reality, recognizing that automatic cognitive stories are just that, stories, not reality itself. Our society faces a dangerous gap between skill and wisdom. We're obsessed with external appearances and superficial accomplishments while neglecting the foundations of character. When people try to improve their lives, they typically look outward, seeking better jobs, partners, or possessions. But these external goals are merely means to internal ends. Our deepest needs relate to wisdom, character, and well-being, skills not taught in school. The transhumanist vision reminds us that humanity can be far greater than it is today. The human condition is a work in progress, an early draft of what could become a masterpiece. This evolution begins with the individual mind through deliberate design directed toward our highest values. The ultimate message is clear. Be a software optimizer first and a circumstance optimizer second. Place mind development above all else. Make psychotecture your highest priority and watch your experience transform. No matter your starting point, you have the power to design your mind.